Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. The message behind the Grief Gang is to normalise the topic of conversation that is grief. People living with grief can often feel ashamed, isolated and alone. This podcast was created to break those taboos after I, myself, experienced all of those feelings after the loss of my mum in 2016. I decided enough was enough and we need to talk about this. You'll hear on this podcast an array of stories and experiences, some being my own and some being fantastic guest episodes and their incredible stories. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but I hope above all, I hope you'll learn. I hope you'll learn that you are not alone in your grief journey, that you have a voice and it should be heard, that you and your grief matter. So without further ado, I'll let you enjoy the episode. Happy listening. Hello, hello, hello. How the devil are we? Welcome to the Death Dilemmas episode. With me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. I feel a bit rusty. You must be so bored of me saying that. I feel a bit rusty when I do solo episodes. But I've made a deal with myself to be like, Amber, you need to get back on the mic, just you, yourself and I, because I do enjoy it, as you can see in the smile on my face. But I get a bit nervy B, darlings. I get a bit nervy B, even though so many of you reach out and say, oh, we love ones of just you. That's not shitting on any guests. But yeah, I'm biting the bullet and I'm going to be trying to come back just a little bit more with me on solo episodes. So let's see how it goes. And I thought none other to kind of, dust off the old hat. Dust it all off. To come up with a Death Dilemma episode. So now, if you have been here for a while, you'll know what the Death Dilemma episode is. If you haven't, the Death Dilemma episode, it is when I put a call out on the Instagram and the Grief Gang social medias, and I ask you, what's your dilemmas? What's your griefy death dilemmas? Your like situations that you're in, things that are bothering you, and to just share it with me, a listening friend, a listening ear, because we are all friends here. And so, huge disclaimer before we get into it. As you know, I'm not a professional. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I am just a fellow griever who's, I'd probably say, a bit of a veteran now. I'm approaching my 6 years, which isn't really veterany, to be honest, but I do feel quite old in my grief. Imagine this episode, just me and you are sitting down, we're asking each other questions, I'm sharing some of my experience to some of these that I can relate to, and then sometimes I might call upon a friend who can help me out, which I have done today for one specific dilemma that has come in. Before I kickstart into it, I do want to let you guys know, if you follow on the Instagram or not, you might just listen to the podcast, not bother with the old socials. I, myself, and my lovely, lovely sister in grief, Poppy Chancellor of the account The Grief Case, have started a Patreon account. Now, if you don't know what a Patreon account is a it's like a subscription-based service where creators are on there to kind of sustain their profession. And again, if you've been here for a while, you know that Poppy and I have been working together for quite a long time now, like 2 years now. We've become the greatest of friends, and we thought we'd really like to create an intimate space for our communities to come over and have those delicate conversations that kind of the likes of Instagram and the fast-paced social media can't really hold. And so we kickstarted it at the end of April, beginning of May, and we of starting our first book club, which we're so excited about. We're reading Grief is Love by Marissa Renee Lee. So that's one part of our Patreon. So we've got a book club, a TV and film club. We're going to be doing live videos like our Instagram lives that we were doing, some pre-recorded videos with some really special guests that you know and love, and some workshops, some virtual and hopefully in-person workshops too, so we can get a bit creative. So if that sounds up your street, you can look at the episode details on wherever you're listening at. I'll pop a little link there, or head over to both of our socials and the link is in our bio, and it is called Unpacking Grief, because there's a bloody lot to unpack there, isn't it? And yeah, we're really quite excited for it. We've got a few people signed up to join in our book club, and so we're really, really keen for it, and we hope that you will join us. But enough about that. I suppose we should get into these dilemmas. So yeah, we had quite a few. I say we, like, who is it? It's just me. I'm going to kickstart, and all names are left anonymous. For obviously confidentiality, safety. If there are names in the dilemma, I will change them out, or my lovely editor Ross will bleep them out. So let's kickstart into it. So I'm going to be looking over this way. I'm looking at my iPad and going back and forth between screenshots and my doc and stuff like that. So our first dilemma. This first dilemma, it made me laugh because I could just imagine this person in this moment. So here it is. What to do when you have a massive brain fog moment, something like not remembering the word for a dog. Me last week, quotations, fluffy thing, cute, people have them for pets, take them on walks. This is so real. Brain fog is fucking real in grief. And I wrote a few little notes down to kind of probe myself. So I think I've got a tendency for when I do death dilemmas, going off on a tangent about one specific point to it and then be like, oh shit, I haven't said about that. So I've got a few notes down. So when brain fog, for me, and this is all in my own personal experience with it, when brain fog kind of comes, and whenever somebody has asked me, like, what do I do in that moment? It's kind of like, what can you do? Your brain is literally fogging. It's literally got a cloud in front of it. There's not really much you can do. So I would say you kind of need to sit with it. Let it come in. Let it pass over. I think in terms when I've had brain fog really coming in and really fucking, like, I can imagine, what's the word for a dog? What is it? To sit with it, to let it come in. The more you resist it and try to battle it, the more it's going to intensify. And that's what I've known. I mean, you're really trying to, it's when the word is on the tip of your tongue and you're like, oh, and the more you think about it, and then maybe like 20 minutes later, it'll just come to you and you're like, oh, that's what the name for a dog is, a dog. And to also be gentle with yourself when these moments come in. I know it's so frustrating and you get really pissed off with yourself. You're like, what the fuck am I doing? Why can't I remember this? Why am I literally like in the aisle of a supermarket and I've just completely forgot why on earth I'm down this aisle? Or you've walked into a room and you're like just in the depths of you're having a really low day and you're like, what the fuck did I come in here for? It can be really frustrating on yourself and you can really beat yourself up and berate yourself for being like, oh my God, just get your shit together. Like, fuck me. But to really just pause. That's something that I've learned, because I am very much I will get very frustrated with myself. And I notice that I get a right tears and really angry at myself. And I'm kind of learning to just be like, Amber, let the brain fog pass through. It's not going to be here forever. Don't worry. You'll be okay. Brain fog is real. Let it in. Let it pass over. Next dilemma. This one is all about guilt. cure, don't we know about guilt, right? How do you deal with guilt after a loss? Brackets, lost my grandma of COVID last month. I'm so sorry. That's so fresh. What I've wrote down, I actually did way back when, in the very early days of the podcast, a whole episode on guilt. So if you want to, I would say go back and listen to that. I should probably go back and listen to it, really, kind of see what I was saying in there. But I'm not just going to say go back and listen to that episode. But guilt within grief is real, and that can have so many different connotations. I don't know, maybe depending on how your person died and situations around it. And in my context, the kind of guilt that I did live with, and there's a key part there, I did live with, I don't live with it anymore, I don't live with that guilt. I used to really beat myself up about not picking up the signs of my mum's foreseeable heart attack. So for a bit more context of that, was my mum's heart attack was inevitable, so the doctors told us. He said it was always going to be on the cards, like her heart was weak or some shit like that. And I remember, yeah, he kind of said, you know, she might have felt some kind of flutters maybe in her heart, and that might have been an instigation. And then month after that, it wasn't immediate guilt for me with that. Once he said that, I didn't kind of sit in and go, oh, I fucked it. I lived with her. I should have seen it. We were every day together. It was a good like 7 months after my mum died, and that's when the guilt kind of started seeping in. And I remember really one specific time, I was on the staff bus on the way to work, and I remember thinking, I wonder if she had a really chesty cough back in like the February of that year of 2016. I remember thinking, I wonder if I forced her to go to the doctors and get that checked out, would they have picked up that there was something wrong with her heart and maybe have gone for more testings? And I sat with that for quite a long time. And I'll be totally honest, I can't know or when that kind of changed of how I went, Amber, you've got to let this go. You've got to let this guilt go. There was nothing I could have done. Potentially even, I think I actually may have consulted somebody about it. I can't remember whom, but I think I said, you know, if I had forced her to go to the doctors around that time of year, about 6 months before she died, would I have picked up on it? And they were like, she would have gone to the doctors, said, I've got a chesty cold, it's February, it's winter. They would have gone, here's some antibiotics or something, off you go. And so that kind of gave me a bit of peace of mind, but it still stuck with me for quite some time. Guilt is very natural. And like I said, for me, there was no kind of switch off with it. I got to a point where I was so tired of guilt tripping myself. So guilty. Like I was tired of the guilt. And I think you do get a bit tired of the guilt and you eventually go, oh, fuck this. I can't live with this. I know that's so much easier said than done. So much easier said than done. And it's going to take time. And you know, so time is a healer. I'm not about to sit here and say time is a healer, but guilt is very real. And you do have to sit with these things, all these feelings in grief, right? There's always that age old saying, you've got to feel it to heal it and let it all in. And I'm a true advocate of that. I do like a platitudes, guys. And so I can totally imagine hearing this now, when you are literally a month into your grief, you might be like, fuck off, Amber. But it will ease. It will ease. I'm not going to sit here and say it's going to pass. I can't talk for your life and say, yeah, in X amount of time, it's going to go away. It will ease. I do get bouts of guilt too. And there's so much more that you can feel guilt about too. There's guilt in everything, you know. Could I have told them I loved them more? Could I have gone out with them more? Could I have spent time with them more? And I think that's the natural part when you always think. And even the people that I have met who were, I don't know, and I'm not saying that you weren't with your grandmother, you know, tighter than tight, like every day, did so many things together, told each other they loved each other every time they hung up the phone. It's never enough, is it? It's never going to be enough. We will always feel that I could have done more, I could have said more, I could have been more. Guilt is fucking real. And that's what I'm going to say. It's all fucking real because this is all natural parts of grief. And I just want to say, yeah, it will ease up. It will ease up. I'm not going to sit here and say it's ever going to go away, because I'd be a hypocrite to say that, because I do still feel guilt sometimes around things, but it will ease up. So all my love. All right, next dilemma. this one hits a bit, you know, because it's a bit similar to kind of something I'm going through now. So I'm not laughing at the situation. I'm laughing at my own life because it's quite active actually right now. And I'm probably going to be maybe a bit hypocritical and actually should probably take my own advice in this dilemma. But that's what I love about you guys is when you write in, sometimes you read me for filth and you give me a bit of a reality check. So this dilemma. My dad's partner announced she's getting married next year. Dad has been dead for 18 months. They were together for 5 years. Did he mean anything? All of his photos are replaced with her new partner. The first thing I think that is coming to mind for me that I'm thinking about is, what is your relationship like with your dad's partner? And whether it is a trusting relationship and whether you still remain close or have relations with each other where you could go and ask these questions, and or just not even if there is a question, just to share your feelings of that, you think, did dad mean anything? So that's immediately what's kind of coming to me. But before I take a bit more of a deep dive on that, the reason why this situation is quite close to me, and it's a little different, might be totally different. You might listen and be like, oh, but that has nothing to do with this. My parents separated when I was about 14, 15. And it was a very toxic relationship for quite a long time. And so when mum died, obviously they were still separated, but dad was and still is a really, you know, they were married for how many years and had two children together. So he is very much a very special link and connection that I have to mum. And my dad, since their separation, has dated and as of recently has a new relationship. And if you're watching this, you'll see the the smile on my face. I'm wondering if my brother's listening to this. But there's been a change. There has been a change, and I'm not going to go into airing dirty laundry at the moment. I don't know. I might find the words for it at a later date. But it's very different, and it's quite hard to navigate at the moment, I won't lie. And I do feel a bit lost in it because it does kind of feel like, although my parents were separated, the relation between my dad and I was very much, we would speak about mum a lot and would spend quite some time together talking about her. And now this new person is in the scene and they're still quite early doors. There's been a change and it does feel a little like I've lost a link to my mum and kind of that safety. And there's probably elements of abandonment in there. Fuck me, it's just turned into a therapy session. And, you know, he's my only remaining parent left and stuff like that. But I am totally with this person, their dilemma of the question that they asked of, did they mean anything? And maybe right now in my situation, I'm probably not the best to answer it, but I'm really going to try my best. And kind of we're going through similar things together. So I totally resonate with the question that you ask and the open why question of, yeah, did they mean anything? And going back to what I asked earlier of wondering what your relationship is like with your stepmom, and if it is an option for you to speak with her to say, I know you've got a new partner. I don't know how you feel about that. Like, do you feel happy for her that she's found a new partner? To have that open dialogue of, this is how I feel. Dad has been dead for 18 months. And that's not me sitting here. I'm not about to sit here and dictate what is long enough, what time frame somebody should have a new partner. That's not my dictation at all. But I feel like potentially in this dilemma, that is kind of a bit how you're feeling, you emphasizing dad's been dead for 18 months. For you, I'm gathering and assuming, maybe that's me being a wrong assumption, that feels too soon for you. And I think, speaking from my situation, is there ever a right time? Maybe that's out of line for me to say. I'm projecting my own shit. Is there any a right time? Will there ever be a time where kind of somebody will walk into the people that we love's life, where our person once sat and took that space? Will it ever feel like initially, instantly, okay? I want to also say too, with this one as well, is that, and again, don't shoot me down, but we do have to respect and acknowledge that the people we lose, so in this scenario, so for you, you've lost your dad, and for your stepmom, she's lost her life partner. And although you have lost the same individual, those are two completely different relations. Even like for me and my brother, we both lost the exact same mum and the same role model in our life, but we had two different relationships. And respecting that, I think when it comes and...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is what I've learned from many people who have lost a partner, is you do miss that intimacy with somebody and wanting to be loved again. And I think there's nothing wrong in that. And I'm sorry for me saying that, but I don't think that disregards your dad. I could imagine that if you sat down with your stepmom and said all of this, she could come out with some stuff that might really surprise you. You never know, with her and her new partner, your dad could be a real constant in there. And he could be talked about a lot, celebrated a lot. That's what I hope for. That's what I hope for. So my little bit of piece of advice with this would be, to summarise, sit down with her. I hope you have got that relationship. And even if you don't, I think for your peace of mind, to get this off your chest, and that is kind of what like I've done with my dad. It's been explosive at times. I'm not going to lie and say it's all honky-dory and that kind of, you get it off your chest and they kind of be really receptive to it and they're like, oh yeah, okay, well, I respect that. And it could be a bit combative. I think you need to have the conversation. Sorry for that roundhouse and me like therapy dumping on you there. But it is extremely hard when, let's say, like in my, the remaining parent gets a new partner, and in this case as well. So I'm sending a shit ton of love. If you want to reach out and we can talk about it more in the DMs. Absolutely. My DMs are always open. This one's short and sweet, like it. Sometimes it may not be possible to fulfill some of their dreams/wishes. Is that okay? I always love the questions that leave with, is that okay? Because I was like, yeah, yeah, it totally is. It totally bloody is. And what is normal? What is normal and not normal in grief? When I saw this dilemma come in, the first thing I kind of wanted to say was that the key part in that, what was coming up for me, was it was their wishes. Now stick with me here. It was their wishes. And I think that I went into a quite similar state like this of I have to fulfill all of my mum's like last wishes that she wanted to do. And I mean, there wasn't a great deal on kind of like enormous bucket list type of things. But I think I began to get into a state where I started living and manufacturing my life to fulfill my mum's wishes, lifestyle, and almost character. I think there was a stage in my life where I almost tried to emulate my mum. I have elements of my mum, of course, I'm her daughter, but I really almost started to become a mini Sue. And with that, really wanted to fulfill some of those wishes. I don't know what these wishes are, whether they're kind of feasible, like doable. Are they really like out there kind of wishes? Or are they even sometimes their wishes might actually go against potentially, I don't know, maybe your own moral compass or something you actually think, actually, I don't really want to do that. So when we're talking in the part of like, okay, not fulfilling their wishes, is this a case of like, it's actually not doable? Like, I cannot do this. It's like, just not attainable. Or is it a thing of, I can't fulfill these wishes because I don't want to, or it's too difficult to, it's too painful to. And so if it's a question of that, of if it's too painful to, like, I can't do this, I don't think it's good for me to go out and fulfill this, that's when I think we should look at how we can honour them in different ways. And there are so many different ways that you can honour them and honour their legacy in ways that maybe they might have said that they wanted it to be done. And so I think, yeah, I would say if it's not possible or you don't want to fulfill their wishes, that is completely okay. You can honour them in whatever way feels comfortable and respectful to you, I believe. Because if you don't, and I think if you live in a way, and again, this is kind of, I can only ever speak from my own personal context, you will burn the fuck out. And then there's another part of this is where, okay, you're fulfilling their wishes, but in a way, like I would sit there and I would think I would fulfill some of the things my mum wanted to do. But then almost, and maybe this is a shallow way of me thinking, I was like, okay, but where's the gratification? Because the person I've done it for is dead. Sorry to be blunt, but this was me. I thought, right, okay, I've just gone and ticked XYZ off mum's wish list or things that she said that she wanted to do or that like we wanted, she wanted us to do, etc. And I've done it. And it was such an anticlimax. But when I started flipping the script and I went, right, I want to honour my mum and fulfil wishes for myself that honour her, for me, it gave me more validation. I'm a validation seeker. What can I bloody say? On this next one, I've had to call in one of my girlies, one of my homegirls, because I can't relate to this one. And that's not with it, kind of, it is in terms of grief, but it's in terms of outer world of grief. So the question is, dating while grieving. I feel so nervous about when/if to bring up my grief. And so dating while grieving has come up so much in my DMs, in comments of like, please do an episode on this, Amber. And it has been on my whiteboard that's in front of me right now of full episodes to do. So I think this is quite a nice little intro to that. And to hold tight, we will do a full episode on dating while grieving. But to satisfy your ears right now, I called upon my friend Helen to ask her about dating while grieving. And so she so very kindly left me a little voice note. So hold tight, I'm going to pull that up.
Dating while grieving. So to this, I would say it's a really good question because we all have to go through it. If you are single, you're going to have to date when if your parent has passed. And it's really interesting because I feel like a very normal question that someone asks when you're dating is like, oh, what do your parents do? And I found myself sometimes speaking about my dad in present tense, like, oh yeah, he's a civil engineer, or sometimes past tense, like I would with any other situation. But inevitably, at some point, it does come up that, you know, your parent is passed, and like, whether you want to talk about that and explain your whole life story, sometimes you do, and sometimes it's nice to find someone who's like receptive to speaking about it, and sometimes you're just like saying it because it's matter of fact. And I think that's the same when it comes to like friends and any other setting in your life, if you're going to talk about your bereaved person. But you know, I think if you're in the early depths of your grief, like, there is no need to date. Like, I know I did date, and now I think back to it, I probably shouldn't have been, because at the end of the day, I think it's quite easy to get into like trauma bonding when you're not like settled within yourself and you're bereaved and you're just trying to work through life and all your friends are dating, so you don't want to just like be this, you still want to be on the same trajectory as all your other friends. But I think it's also important that, like, you know who you are, and you know how settled you are within your grief, because then when someone asks you like, oh, like, what does your ex, you know, your bereaved parent do or something, you don't feel like that's such a question that throws you off so much, because you've given yourself time to actually like process that, and you're not bringing that to a relationship. That's what I think.
There she is. That is my lovely friend Helen, who is also a fellow podcaster. And her podcast is called Let's Get Lytical. Let's get lytical, lytical. So I hope that was a nice bit of advice there from a fellow grieving dater. I can't relate to that, because I can categorically say I've never dated in my life. And that's not because I'm a hermit, because I'm absolutely stunning and I would be an absolute catch if I was single. But I've been with my partner since I was 16, and I think any kind of dating, quote unquote, before that was not classified as dating. But yeah, I think Heather made some really key points there of kind of that feeling, kind of, yeah, like, right, if it, maybe it's, you're not ready to date yet, if kind of the thought of it coming up is a real palm sweater, maybe to sit back and reflect there and think, right, am I ready? Because I think quite naturally it will come up in dating. So thank you, Helen, for that piece of advice. And thank you for that person who wrote in. Next dilemma, and I'm probably going to wrap it up with this one, because I'm trying to keep these nice and short and sweet, because I know that's what you guys apparently like. You like a bit of a variety of the long ones, long episodes, and the short ones. So let's go. After experiencing an incredibly traumatic and sudden loss, how do people move forward in their lives without the fear of it constantly happening again? Sometimes I feel I've made peace. It was extraordinary circumstances. My brother was killed serving in Afghanistan. But sometimes the sheer panic and fear of it happening again to someone I love is overwhelming, and I cannot move past it. I feel I need to be constantly prepared for it, like I'm living on the edge of my seat in flight or fight mode. I now have children, and at times I wake in the night and run to check on them just in case. How do people continue in their lives without the fear of what's coming? That last line there, how do people continue in their lives without the fear of what's coming? When I saw this dilemma, it really made me think about death anxiety, and death anxiety can be, I think, attached to yourself and your own health and your own death. But obviously it can be attached to those that you love and those who remain around you when you have lost somebody to quite a traumatic death. And I think traumatic death, especially in these circumstances, and how that your brother died is extremely traumatic and extraordinary circumstances. But I think attaching the word like traumatic, I think can be applied for kind of how anyone dies, whether in your eyes you feel you had, quote unquote, like I like to say, like the Hollywood grief, where like the perfect death, there's a perfect death, a good death, they died elderly, they died peacefully, they died comfortably. It can still be quite traumatic. Having somebody in your life one day and not the next is a very traumatic ordeal. But to speak in context with this, the fear, living with the fear and that death anxiety around who's next, who's next in my life. And I will refer back to a post that I saw quite some time ago, and it was kind of like, you feel like, or you hope for, that when you lose somebody so significant in your life, that kind of, that's it. Like you're capped. Like, I have gone through this horrific thing, and surely that is the last thing the world is going to spew at me. I physically and emotionally cannot take any other kind of loss. And it almost, what they wrote were kind of like, you know, you have almost like an insurance policy, yeah, you've had one death, you're covered now for the next 20, 30, whatever years. And sometimes I know I kind of felt like that. And then I had a relative die back in November last year, and I thought, well, that's my policy up. Policy's fucked. Going back to the kind of the point that I made in the beginning with the other dilemma of kind of, you, and I don't know how long ago, you didn't say how long ago that your brother died. I think there'll always be an element that we live with it. And I know that's probably not a bit of hopeful or positive maybe advice, but it's something that you live with. And I have no shame to say that I still have that sheer panic as well. So I hope for me saying that, you know, that you're not alone and that it is a normal thing. And that even me now, sometimes in the dead of the night, I will really panic and think about kind of sometimes the older relatives in my life, or if my dad's coming late home, I'm thinking, is he okay? Has something awful happened? Or there's one specific time, I don't know if I've spoken about it on the podcast or not, when my partner, he was at home and we were texting, and then he just stopped texting. And we live, our family homes live about 35 to 40 minutes away door to door. And in my panic, there was nothing that instigated something is wrong. We were texting fine. It just stopped. And I got up, this is in the middle of the night, this is, I kid you not, about midnight, got in my car and drove to his house. I have a key. And so I came in, burst through his bedroom door, like in hysterics, and the guy was just fast asleep in his bed. I think he was drunk. And he woke up and went, what are you doing here? I went, and I bust down, and I went, I thought you've died. He went, Amber. And I think in that moment, I think that was quite a big thing for him to realise, she's going to live with this forever. And I think it was kind of the unsaid was said between us. And I was a bit like, this is forever, kind of, these small bouts. And they're not frequent. And I hope for you that listening to this, they will lessen and lessen. But they think they will always stay. That's that trauma that's just kind of deep rooted in us, in the fear of who's next and when is it going to be. But to give kind of a little tip, that since that day for me when I did that, I realised, Amber, something has to be put in place where when moments like that happen, instead of immediately grabbing the keys, going, or immediately calling somebody, are you okay, is everything all right, and panicking and being in the real tears, was this kind of, I can't remember the ins and outs of it, but I just do it, and I can't remember what the actual structure is behind it, but in those moments to stop, pause, instead of immediately rushing to do something and kind of really getting in that moment, is to count five things in the room that you're in. And I think this is a tip and a strategy that is used for many people who suffer with anxiety, to stop, to pause, to count five things in the room. So you're looking, you're like, right, lamp, desk, whatever it is, you know, and count down. And if even after five, you're still feeling heightened and stuff, you go again. You keep going until your breath comes back. So that's a little tip that I would say. But then also, if you do genuinely feel that this is something that impacts your day-to-day life and how you live, I would encourage you to speak to a professional who would be qualified and trained to unpack traumatic losses, such as the one that you have been through. Losing a brother in combat in Afghanistan is extremely extraordinary circumstances, and there are people out there that are qualified and will help you through this to ensure that you can live a day-to-day life without having this anxiety and this fear course through your body. So thank you to everybody who has wrote in today for the Deaf Dilemma segment. I'll say it'd be short and sweet. It's nearly about 40 minutes. Bloody hell. If you would like to write in a Deaf Dilemma, you can email me at amber.jeffrey@thegriefgang.com. You can drop me a DM or keep your eyes peeled. I tend to put up little question boxes on the Instagram stories where most of you have wrote in today. Like I said, come and join us over at the Patreon at Unpacking Grief. Really, really excited to get the ball like proper rolling with that. It's going to be fun. It's going to be juicy. And yeah, we're nearly at the end of season three. I mean, it's been a bloody long season, and I am plotting and scheming the next season, season four, that will come back kind of end of summer. But I need to take a break soon. It's been so fun, but your girl needs a break. So thank you as always. Big love. Take care of yourself. I have been your host, Amber Jeffrey, and this is the Grief Gang Podcast. Bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it and it set your week off to a great start. Whether you've laughed a little, cried a little, I mean, I think crying is good for the soul, or you've resonated with something that was said, thank you for listening and spending time out of your day to do so. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and subscribe. In doing so, you're ensuring that lots more people get to find the Grief Gang podcast and hopefully help them too. If you're not already, check out the Grief Gang on social media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'm most active on the Instagram page, where I love, love, love to connect with you all. For now, take care and big, big love.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.